know that there's a good number of us here that work for State Farm, and last week and even into this week has not been a great week. So Jeff Smith is like I think Anthony called him saving the world. Like, that's how like Jeff is with systems. But I also work in systems, and so Jeff saves the world and I have this little small piece, but there's fires everywhere, and it has been like, I was working yesterday and on calls, and everyone's been crazy. So it's I feel not on my A game, so you'll have to forgive me, but it's been a week for State Farm. All the operations are a mess and will be messes for weeks. So we lost power for a while and created some chaos. So a lot of lessons learned. So we're studying evidences. Lesson 7, which we started last week, and 8 really merged together. That was the plan. And so we're really continuing the discussion from lesson 7, and it just flows more into the story. As I was looking over things this morning, I really like my wife being in my classes and hearing my lessons. She's really good at giving me candid feedback, and one thing she says is that sometimes I miss some connecting points. And so when I was looking through this, I felt like I was probably missing some connecting points, so I added them to hopefully it clears up, but we can talk through that. So we're going through, and we're really at the point where we've looked at the world around us, and we have seen that there, so I came to the conclusion that there is a God. Now, which God? We looked at a couple different religions. We landed on there's some continuity with the Old Testament scriptures pointing to a Messiah. And so we're really kind of closing up that conversation. And so after today, assuming we get through everything, which I hope we do, from this point forward, we will conclude that the scriptures that we have here, the text here, the letters and the writings we have here are, in fact, from God. And so we will spend the rest of the time really focusing in on the New Testament. So we'll look at the gospel and some of the church. And so there's one more week in February, and so all of March will be focused in on that. So, and so today we're really pulling together what's that storyline? What's that cohesive story? How do we connect the dots to what we've studied? And where does that fit in? And kind of that final conclusion then, that this is what we need to pay attention to. And then how does that fit in with what we've learned already? So before we jump in, Terry, would you open prayer? So at the end of last week, we talked through some key characters in this story, and we brought up people like Adam and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and that the beginning of man, and then God giving promises, selecting a group of people to tell this story to, which is a small subset of all people involved. He didn't neglect and ignore the other group of people, but he selected these people that we call Israelites to focus in on. And so we talked through Joseph and his role in that continuity, and then Moses coming in and bringing the law, which we'll talk a little bit more here. Talked about David being this king figure that we see the Old Testament pointing to as a model for how we should think about our attitude towards God. We see Solomon and his role with the temple playing in there. And we really talk through, there's some key narratives throughout that are important that tell this cohesive story. And then we just started a little bit here with what are some key themes found in the Old Testament. So one thing that I will mention back here that I think was brought up, and I think Scott attributed to Susie, but that God is a key character, is the key character throughout these stories. And then we also talked about this idea of a Messiah as a character through the story. So then what are some of the key themes that you find in the Old Testament? What did you have here?
Covenant relationship.
Yeah. And so you see this connection to God and his people. And so we talked early on about if there is a God, that he would communicate with us. And in that communication, and we'll talk some more about that here in a little bit, but in that communication, he provides instruction and covenant connection, promises to his people, and understanding with his people. What else? Travis? Yeah. There's a clear message of redemption and deliverance from enemies throughout the Old Testament. And later I think we look back and see them as types of the Christ, types of a Messiah. But yeah, definitely a key theme. What else? Mike? Yeah, and so there's not this drop and let things happen. We see God being attentive to his people. And in that attention, he has this cohesive story. So at any point in time, someone may not have the full picture, may not understand everything at that point in time. But when we have the advantage to look back at everything, we can see this cohesive story that God had. And so I'm a little careful in how I say this, but there's a difference in faith that I can have with the understanding that with this detail than what Abraham could have. Abraham didn't have the full picture that we have, and he still had a faith to do things, to serve God. What else? Scott? Yeah. So we're going to get into talking about that from the temple perspective, but the role of sacrifice in the story is absolutely critical, and we'll see that played out when we talk about Jesus in the New Testament. But God laying that foundation in the Old Testament to point us to what he's going to do, what's needed to be done, is huge. What else? Scott? Yeah. So, this idea that we need to be set apart, that we're a special people, and so these themes, if we step back and say, okay, there is this, God has painted this story for this section of people, he's using these people to call out these themes as a shadow for the big picture, right? And so he's saying, I'm setting these people apart, and the New Testament says that we are now those, we are the priests of those people, and so we are to be set apart. And so when we start thinking about these themes and how God pulled this story together, it's even more compelling that this was put together by deity and not by a bunch of men getting together to make this happen. What else?
Messiah.
Mm-hmm. So this pointing to this person coming and providing, having a critical role to this story. And really, everything from the Old Testament pointing to this Messiah, and then everything from the New Testament pointing to the Messiah too. I don't have it's kind of a hard graphic to draw, but on the dry erase board, every kid that's been taking a class with me, I've drawn this on the dry erase board, and I draw arrows to the cross and arrows back to the cross. Like, everything really points back to this Messiah figure. What else? Others? A few more. Yeah. Yeah. So there's this cycle, and I think that helps us, like, when we think about, so there's ebbs and flows in groups of people, but I think we also see that with individuals too. And I think that helps us with our mercy towards each other, that we have ebbs and flows too. And that people fall and rise out of different situations, and that's a pattern that we see. I think we want to diminish the ebbs and flows as time goes on and move them further and further away from sin. My class will never be that exciting. I'm saying right now. Others? Scott? Yeah. So I bucketed that with sin, that we have this opportunity to choose to not do what our Creator has asked us to do or given us instruction to do. And so I bucketed law, sin, and free will, that a Creator would communicate with us, give us promises and covenants, give us instructions, but also give us the ability to not do those things. And so to separate ourselves from God and have that those decisioning rights. And so I think we see God using these people, the Israelites, these chosen people, to paint this picture, to tell this story. But it's a much bigger story. It's not just this small subset of people. He uses them as a shadow of what reality is. And the more time you think about God using that as a shadow, the more and more time it makes sense. Like, if you look at my shadow, you can tell that I'm not a dog, and you might be able to have a rough idea that I'm a man and not a woman, but you're not going to be able to recognize my shadow from Kurt's shadow standing next to me. So you have some detail, but the whole picture is not quite there. But from the shadow, you can see that what is being painted fits with the shadow. Okay. Any other comments on that? So what I want to do for the remainder of the time here is talk to these three things. And I was worried it would feel a little bit like out of order. But one thing I want to do, so if you think about the journey we've been on, that we looked at the world around us, determined that there was a God, but we weren't sure where to look for the details of that God yet. And so we're at the place where we think it's here. So let's see what this says about some of the things that we've learned. And so the first thing I want to look at is I want to look at creation. I want to look at Genesis 1 and say, okay, we believe there's a God. What does the Bible say about this designer, and how did he design the world? And then I want to look at this God then communicating with us. What does he say about that communication? What types of things should we be looking for in that communication? And then the cohesive story I think we've been talking about, well, I want to look at a very specific example of how God long before planned for what we understand today. And so hopefully I can tie that all together and conclude this. So let's read Genesis 1. And then we'll talk through it. In the beginning, God created heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was all over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the water. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God said the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, one day. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the water, and let it separate the water from the waters." God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse, and it was so. God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. Then God said, "Let the waters below the heaven be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear," and it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seeds, and fruit trees on the earth bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them." And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seeds after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind, and God saw that it was good. There was evening, and there was morning, a third day. Then God said, "Let there be light in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light to the earth." And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, and the lesser light to govern the night. He made the stars also. He placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light to the earth, and to govern the day and the night, and separate light from darkness, and God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a fourth day. Then God said, "Let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures, and let the birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens." God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and every winged bird after its kind, and God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." There was evening, and there was morning, a fifth day. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind." And it was so. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and all the earth, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and every living thing that moves on the earth." Then God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of the earth, and every tree which has fruit yielding seed. It shall be food for you. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and everything that moves on the earth, to which has life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and morning the sixth day. So I want to walk through those, but then at the end I want us to think through, how does that mesh, that story mesh with what we have observed in the world around us? So let's talk through 6 days. So if you still have your Bible open, feel free to go look. But day one, what was created? Yeah. So how in the world do you display light and darkness with a graphic without using the sun? Right, but there you go. Two blobs, a light blob and a dark blob. So we have light separated with darkness on day one. What about day two? What do we find on day two? I hear a lot of New Testament, or the New American calls it heavens, but we'll see here in a minute that the idea is sky. It's not where God is dwelling, but so there's this sky and water element of it. What about day three? What's day three? Yeah, so now he pulls everything together and makes land and vegetation on day three. So maybe everyone has seen this already, but I intentionally put day three days on the left side and the 6 days on the right side, because if you look at one through three, it's really laying, I call it the stage. It's where everything from days 4, 5, and 6 is going to be put into. So let's look at, what's day four then? Yeah, so day four, the sun, moon, and stars are put in to the light and darkness. And it says that they are what separate the light and darkness. And so you see this parallel back and forth across day one, day four. You'll see that with day two and day five. So what was day five? Yeah, so the things that are in the sky and in the water, fills it with birds and things in the water. Day six, yeah, animals and people. So land, creatures, and man. And so we have this stage laid out in the first 3 days. Light, darkness, sky, water, land, vegetation. And days 4, 5, and 6 are really the filling of that stage. Questions, comments about that? So, we're working very hard to be transparent and open as we approach this. And I actually didn't think about this for years later, but an interesting thing when you lay it out like this is we fundamentally, so sky and water makes sense to us, and you'd fill it with fish and birds, and land and vegetation then is filled with animals and humans. Right? And sun, moon, stars all make sense to us. But how you have light and darkness without sun, moon, and stars is problematic for us. Right? So we have light and darkness before we have sun and moon. And I'm careful with this, but Mason and I actually had a really good conversation around it. If I were a younger man, I would look and say, light, darkness, that's some stage of some sort. I'd try to figure out what that looks like. How do I, like, we know that you can have light without the sun. Like, we define light differently, right? But how do you have something like that and place it in there? And so it actually gives me no heartburn. It's interesting to me. I just don't know that we understand that well yet. Other comments? Mike? Yeah, so that's a perfect segue into how this fits in with what we've already observed. So we can observe that man is different than everything else, like from an intellect, from an understanding, from how we view things. Nothing is like us. And so here we have an explanation of why that is, and that it is true. So I think that's one piece of where this story that is given to us aligns with what we can observe. It also says that there's one creator and that it is created, that there's a designer. And so we have text saying, so we studied how it looks like when we observe the world around us that it was designed. Now we have a text saying it was created by a being. What else, when we think about the creation story, aligns with what we've talked about, what we can observe in the world around us? Let me, before we go there, I'll ask that question in a minute. Another thing that's, I think, relevant is that Moses is writing this down, and he calls the days, there would be perhaps some debate if Moses was calling them days and what does the day mean, but he calls it morning and evening. Like, morning and evening is a day, and Moses would have known what a day was, and Moses would have known what morning and evening was. So in my mind, Moses is intending to write a morning and evening. He's intending to be a day in this. So then how do what else does this story align with and maybe give us more insight into that we've already talked about? Is that too much of a question? Yep. Yeah, I think a lot of times when we study evidences, and I'm not disagreeing with this, we start with the Bible and then we look for the evidence to support that. We studied with the evidence of the world around us. The evidence of the world around us shows that there's kind only follows kind. The fossil record is species don't jump species. And now when we come to this text that we believe is from God, God says, yep, that's how I created it. And so it's again affirming what we've studied in the world. Others, I realize I may be reaching here, not with what I'm about to say, but that you're following. But are there other things that you think, okay, this story then connects the dots of the other things that we've talked about? Let me also expand it beyond. Let's think about the Genesis story. Are there other things that connect us beyond? So not just Genesis 1, but really the origin stories. It makes it clear that was intentional for us. So if we expand beyond Genesis 1, and we don't have to go too far for this one, but that God created two people. I think one of the things we talked about was from a DNA, someone was doing research on DNA and traced it back to, so they view it as like our ancestors, and then beyond that was a different subset of humans, but to two people, and to that our lineage would have started with two people, and that originated in the Middle East. And so I think that also aligns with this story, says that God started it with two people, likely in the Middle East region, and again supports the evidence of the world when we look around us. One other piece, so if we take Genesis into account, all of Genesis, I think the other thing is that we see, if we add up that time, we see a young earth. We see God creating something not billions and billions of years ago, but that it's a relatively recent endeavor. So I'm using this as an example of, we studied evidences, and now this text, these texts that we're reading, this is one example. I think this is a pretty clear, clean example that aligns with what we've already studied. Any other comments? Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. It's cool. When we were studying evolution and design, one of the gaps that I think is real without this story is that the actual Earth does appear to be older than 10. So there's all these things that center around 10, 12,000 years. The magnetic field, our DNA mistakes, that hone in around that, except for the Earth's core. And then we talked about stars out there, like the light, we understand how light travels and how fast it travels. At least with our understanding, that light has been there for a very long time. But this story closes those gaps. Like, God clearly, Moses clearly indicated through God that man wasn't created as a baby. Man wasn't created, trees were formed, fish were formed. Like, there was food available for them to eat. And the earth was created. And so those things were created to function for life. And those things in place allows for the other, it explains the other gaps, and so are very helpful in our understanding. Other comments? Okay. So I may go through this quickly here, but the idea that God would communicate to us and give us instructions. And so if you turn to Deuteronomy, and we're going to look at the end of Deuteronomy. However, there are numerous places that you could to look for this context. But that God has spoken to his people, and God has a story to tell, and he tells it to his people. And so Deuteronomy is really at the end. We're at the end of Deuteronomy. We're really at the end of Moses' life. And so through God has delivered this law and these instructions to his people through Moses. And then in Deuteronomy 29, verse 29, it says, "The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our sons forever, that we may observe all the works of his law." So Moses is saying, God has revealed something to us. He's given that to us. It's ours to own. It's ours to observe what he's given us. And then in 30, starting in verse 14, he says, "But the word is very near to you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may observe it. See, I've set before you today life and prosperity and death and adversity, in that I command you today to love the Lord, to walk in his ways and keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that I may live and multiply, and that the Lord your God may bless you in the land where you are entering to possess it." And so God is saying, I've given you instructions. I want you to follow them, and I want you to love me. And so God has communicated to his people what he expects of them to do. It's what you would expect a God to do with his creation. Let's look at a few in the New Testament. So Matthew 5. Matthew 5 and verse 16. Is this connection to the old law. So Jesus saying, Matthew 5, 16, says, "Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify the Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. For I truly say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law until all is accomplished." And so Jesus is saying, I am the fulfillment of the law that was given to you. And so this connection to, you should listen to me and the words that I have to say in the old law. In John 20, at the end, close to the end, John 20, in verse 30, he writes about Jesus, and his writings. Therefore, many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing, you may have life in his Son. And so we have this: God gave a law, God gave instructions. Jesus came as the, all those themes that we talked about, Jesus came and embodied them, showed us what those meant, showed us the full man, the full picture. We're not looking at the shadow anymore. And we have the writing of Jesus' life so that we may believe in him and have life in him. And then, we won't turn there, but 2 Timothy 3 talks about Scripture being inspired and good for us, that we should use it to learn and teach and grow. Because of time, I'm not going to read Hebrews 9. Maybe we'll read just a little bit. Hebrews 9. Actually, let's read Hebrews 8, let's just start in verse 1. Now the main point in what has been said is this: we have such a high priest who has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister in the sanctuary and in the true tabernacle which the Lord pitched, not man. For every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices, so it is necessary that the high priest also have something to offer. Now if he were on earth, he would not be a priest at all, since there are those who offer the gifts according to the law, who serve as a copy and a shadow of the heavenly things, just as Moses was warned by God when he was about to erect the tabernacle. For see, he says, that you make all things according to the pattern which was shown on the mountain. But now he has obtained a more excellent ministry, by as much as he is also the mediator of a better covenant, which has been enacted on better promises. So what I want to do is, in the last 7 or 8 minutes, go through an example of what is being talked about here. So the temple, the tabernacle, was given to Moses, given to the people, to structure in a very certain way. And there's a lot of terminology that's used for the Jews that's used here that I want to quickly just talk about and use this as an example of God had this mapped out. He had this laid out long before Jesus came. And so I want to look at this shadow, and I want to look at the temple. And so I didn't do it to scale, so this is just Ben throwing stuff on here for a concept. But so the temple entrance would have faced east, and so we're coming into the temple from the east. And so the first thing you encounter, what would be the first thing they encounter when they came in? Does anyone remember? That's the second. Yeah, there would have been an altar that they would have sacrificed on. And so then the second thing would have been the bronze altar. And so what would you have done at the, not the bronze altar, the basin? The first one is the bronze altar, the basin. So obviously at the altar you sacrifice. At the basin, what would you do? Yeah, there would be a washing. So if we're thinking, like, just start thinking about how that might be applicable to our world. And so then the temple is broken down into two sections, a holy place and a holy of holies. And the priests were allowed in the holy place, and the high priest then holy of holies. And so there's this segment here. But when you walk into the holy place, there's a couple things in there. What were some of the things that would have been in there? Yep, a lamp. What else? Yep, table of showbread on it. What was the third? So that's next. Yep, but I can't. I'd put that up, but it would mess up my PowerPoint joke. What's that? Yeah. Yep. So you have this table of showbread, this lampstand, and this incense. And so there's a couple things that I want to be careful and fair, but we read that incense is like a prayer. A lampstand, light, showbread, connections to a meal, and then to get from the holy place to the holy of holies, there's a veil. And a veil becomes important because we see a connection to that in the New Testament with Jesus and at his death it tore. And then to Jody's point, we have the Ark of the Covenant. And so if you think about the priest being allowed in the holy place, and in the New Testament we are called priests, well, how do you get to be a priest? You sacrifice, wash. Now, how do you get to be a priest? How do you get to be into the holy place as a priest? You sacrifice, you wash, and then you enter the holy place. And in there, you have light. You have an understanding that comes from the light. You have prayers that can be offered up as a sweet aroma. And to get to the Holy of Holies, you have to go through the veil. And if you think about Christ as that veil, to get to the Holy of Holies, you have to be in Christ. You have to go through Christ. And that Ark of the Covenant has a mercy seat on it, which in the Old Testament is this idea of the throne of God. So you want to get to God, you sacrifice, wash, have understanding. You have to go through Christ to get to the Holy of Holies. This was mapped out for the Israelites 1500 BC, 1500 years before Jesus ever existed or the church was ever established in the way that it is today. And here we are. And we have this high priest idea. Jesus is called our high priest. There's ideas of sacrifice involved here, prayer, washings. This is a great example of a story that God had in play long before the story actually played out. What other comments, questions, things to add? So I'll tie that to the shadow. Like this, when Moses put it, God gave this to Moses. Moses couldn't see what this would represent. He was told to follow this pattern. He was building the shadow. And what Mason, I feel like, is saying is we need to test that shadow and make sure it reflects the man that we're looking at. And if it doesn't, then we're looking at the wrong man. Okay. So, some key points from here. The world around us points to a God, which we've already discussed. and the Bible tells us about the God. God has communicated with us and has written it down for us to understand his instructions. And then that those instructions, that scripture, tells a cohesive story that has multiple threads that are woven throughout it, across multiple people, across hundreds of years, to put us where we are today. Okay, so going forward, we'll talk about Jesus and the New Testament. Thank you.